Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's program, the United States is the third largest export economy in the whole world. And today, from the law firm of Diaz Trade, is founder Jennifer Diaz, who is also board certified in international law as well. And she is an expert in customs and international trade law. Also co-author, of What is Trump's 25% tariff on Chinese imports and how can I avoid it? Jennifer Diaz is also an adjunct professor teaching international law. Today, we're going to be talking about import, export, and how companies handle U.S. customs enforcement, companies' intellectual property rights, and understand and meet legal obligations when importing and exporting to comply with U.S. and international law. But first, I'd like to introduce and welcome the legal panel for today's program. Gary Singer, always a pleasure.
Hey, how you doing, Phil?
Another day in paradise, Gary.
Yeah, this is going to be a great show.
It absolutely
trade
is.
Law, she brought presents. I think you should make it a requirement from now on that all guests need to bring
then
presents.
Then how am I going to stand out?
Well, that you bring more presents.
Okay.
This is true.
Others will bring chocolate.
She's in
such demand.
One of our other guests has been trying to meet her. Not just because you're beautiful, but because you're an accomplished attorney.
So
he
kind.
Needs help. Also, Eric Yankwitz.
See that? He's pretty good. That's slick.
See, you got the name right.
Yep. Yankwitz?
Unfortunately, Phil's got a face for radio.
There you go. Eric is
an old one.
Not only an attorney, my personal attorney and accountant, but
so you
he's
think
also
you know his
community,
name?
Community leader. Oh, yeah. I know his name.
What is it?
I know where he lives.
What's his last name?
Yankwitz.
Who?
Gary, I'm going to kick you. Also, on that note, good afternoon to our listeners on 96.9 FM, 103.9 FM, and 740 AM WSBR.
Not to mention our podcast listeners, finding us at Legal News and Review.
Excellent, absolutely. And along with our national listeners on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now. Welcome, and thanks for joining us for today's discussion. And keep emails coming. I appreciate it. I'd like to remind our listeners on Thursdays at 5:30 p.m., you could tune in and watch live on Facebook. Just Google, it's just so simple, Facebook Legal News and Review, and you'll see we're recording today at the Kelly Ustahl Building in their very own mock courtroom. I mean, you talk about resources. It's because of these resources, as well, more importantly, their successes, reasons why attorneys do refer them cases. If you've been severely injured by someone else's negligence, go to justiceforall.com. That's justiceforall.com. Jennifer Diaz, welcome to Legal News and Review.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you're so young, but have all these accomplishments. I thought you were over the hill.
Oh, it feels like I'm over the hill, though.
Yeah,
I have gray hairs to prove it.
You know
that
just what
you.
To say to a lady, Phil.
Right, seriously.
Such a way with words.
This is true.
Keep the compliments coming.
You should go on the radio or something.
You know, right. One question I want to start off with is I've been hearing this for years, dumping. Or even a subsidization of products being
anti-dumping and countervailing duties is a hot topic.
How is this remedied?
That's a fun question because you have one side where you have U.S. manufacturers, mm-hmm. U.S. producers of goods, and then you have U.S. importers. There's still U.S. companies that are importing. Your everyday mom and pops around the world, you have a lot of small businesses that are importing. But the way that starts is you have a U.S. company that produces a product, say a pencil, wooden bedroom furniture, real cases, artist canvas. And what the U.S. producers say is that other products are coming into the country at less than fair market value, and the U.S. companies can no longer compete because those prices are so low that are coming into the U.S., they're putting them out of business. So you have U.S. jobs and U.S. production mm-hmm. at risk. So what does the U.S. government do? They step in. It's protectionist. So then you have questionnaires sent out to the foreign governments. Is the foreign government actually helping with the subsidy, or is the company that's making the product in a foreign country actually selling it at less than fair market value? Either way, it's anti-dumping or countervailing duty, just if the company is producing at less than fair market, or if the government, the foreign government, is actually subsidizing. So our U.S. government steps in to make it right. So they assess an anti-dumping duty or a countervailing duty, sometimes both,
by
against a product.
Duty, you mean tax.
Yes. Okay. We're going to talk a lot about duties today.
Yes.
So
yes, my kids like
a lot
to talk
of poop
about
emojis
those
coming
yeah,
out today, right?
Sure.
Yes, lots of
tax.
Duty.
Duty is a nice way to say
tax. So duty is a painful tax, and yes. We live and die by customs duties.
Mm-hmm.
D-U-T-I-E-S.
What about the tariffs?
It's still funny no matter how
it
you
is,
say it.
Right? It is, right? You can spell it any way you want. It's still duty.
What about the treaties and tariffs changes? I understand the new treaty with Mexico puts real teeth regarding intellectual property law, and that's part of your practice as well.
For sure. Intellectual property rights is a biggie. To give you a glimpse, this is one of my favorite reports. So U.S. Customs produces a report every year of just intellectual property right crime that goes on in the U.S.
Right.
And within this report, guess how many seizures there were in 2017 for intellectual property rights violations? Take a wild guess.
You
earn your
three.
Cafecito.
You
mug.
Mean three. Fake handbags.
Yeah, I mean fake handbags, fake shoes, fake pharmaceuticals, fake electronics.
Million.
You know, you're close with the three at the beginning. Anybody else?
300.
I have no clue.
Take a guess.
I said three.
More than three.
More than three.
A lot more. 34,143 seizures for intellectual property right violations.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, guess the number one country that was the offender?
China.
Yay, China. Yeah. What a shock. China.
That seems low. 34,000.
Well, this is the actual number of seizures. We're not talking about the actual value of the goods. When we talk about the value of the goods, you're talking about $1.2 billion worth of goods that were seized by U.S. Customs. So what happens after the seizure case is if you actually protect your trademark, so for example, let's pretend you were, you know.
We're talking fake handbags.
Well, let's talk about Fendi, for example. Sort of thing. So let's talk about Fendi as an example. So Fendi has a trademark, right? And they take the time to protect that trademark with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Let the world know, my trademark, Fendi, I own it. The cool part is you also have U.S. Customs after that. You can tell U.S. Customs, I want you to police my trademark. And they will police it at 329 ports of entry. And then if there's ever an issue with that trademark, Customs gets involved, seizes those goods. That's the 34,000 seizures that occurred. And if you've taken the time to record your trademark with Customs, not only will Customs seize it, but after the seizure, they'll issue you a penalty for the MSRP as if it was original. So how much did a Fendi bag truly cost?
For the company that's
for the company.
It in. Gotcha.
So imagine if you bought a fake Fendi purse, what did you pay, $5? Mm-hmm. How much is a real Fendi purse?
$500.
Well, 5,000, right? Could be 50. I mean, could be whatever crazy number.
Yeah, but these
got to
be shell companies, right? I mean, they're not getting that money.
Oh, that's not true, though.
Really?
There are a whole lot of IPR penalties where companies actually do have
to
pay.
What's an IPR?
Intellectual property rights. So there are a whole lot of companies that import products. Do you have a lot of small businesses that really are the ones that get screwed as a result of this?
Sure.
That happens every day. So we wind up helping companies that wind up, you know, they purchase on Alibaba. You know, how many companies are e-commerce related companies and purchase something online? How much due diligence are you doing before you make your own Amazon purchase, right?
Yeah.
Do you actually check out the supplier and see where they are and see whether or not you're actually importing?
Never once.
Who does, right?
Well,
I do. Right,
I mean,
you
should.
That's
important to do when you're buying paper towels at $3.
Right, exactly. From a forced labor sweatshop, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, my late wife and I used to, when we came down here 26 years ago, would go to the to that flea market there off of Sunrise.
Right.
It's still a great place.
For sure.
But my goodness, we would find Louis Vuitton bags and things like that for pennies on the dollar.
Right. 100%. Canal Street.
Are you impugning the swap shop?
I am. But they've cracked down on that. I know
they got rid of the circus.
That really was
a big disappointment. Got rid of the circus.
But going back to the trade agreements, for example,
yes.
So free trade agreements, we have, and within your little cheat sheets that I've presented to you guys, this is my favorite. I present the top 10 tips when importing and exporting to ensure compliance. So we have free trade agreements in place in the U.S. Guess how many countries we have free trade agreements in place with?
Four.
20.
Oh, okay.
So we've got 20 countries. So obviously Canada and Mexico, most popular. Everyone talks about NAFTA. So now we have what I call NAFTA 2.0. So USMCA, so people joke that it's like YMCA. Sounds similar, right?
Right.
So within what happens is free trade agreements take forever to get negotiated. As you can imagine, you're bringing two countries or sometimes multi, you're bringing more than two countries to the table. That's a lot. It's a lot to negotiate. You have anything from intellectual property rights to labor standards. Sometimes you have women's issues that make it to the table, which I'm always happy about. You have all sorts of market access issues that come to the table, in addition to customs duties, your favorite word. So we have all sorts of things that are coming to play within a free trade agreement. Now, when we get involved, me personally with my firm, I am not a policy person. I can't sit down and negotiate for 10 years at a time without pulling all my hair out. But what I love is when the actual trade agreement is confirmed and when we actually have something to talk about at the end, when we really have a piece of paper we can go through, and usually a big, thick book we can go through, and we can talk about market access opportunities as a result of that free trade agreement. That's when I get excited, because that's when a client will come to me saying, I want to import X. Can I use this free trade agreement to import X? Or I got in trouble because I utilized the free trade agreement, which is more often. I don't know about your practice areas, but in mine, when do people want to pay me is when they're in trouble. Right?
Always. Right. Always.
It's much easier to pay a lawyer when you're in trouble than when you want right. to
you
perform
pay a little
compliance.
Now, you pay a lot more later. Right. But right. Florida is known to be an export capital of the United
yeah.
States. $55 billion a year. But interesting enough, from Florida, we send more goods to Brazil,
yep.
and then Canada, and then Mexico, and Germany and Colombia are pretty much tied here.
Yep.
But this figure astounded me. Jobs supported by the total U.S. exports, okay? The total jobs are 10.7 million nationwide.
For sure, and export jobs pay more. So you've got our U.S. government really trying to push and promote exports as well. So we've got all sorts of fabulous trade numbers. Mm-hmm. World City is one of my favorite publications that takes census data. So the same as when you get those census polls in your house that you're not so sure about, the same thing happens with cargo. So you want to, U.S. government always wants to keep track of all the cargo coming into the U.S., all the cargo leaving the U.S., where it's coming from, where it's going to. So all of that data gets populated. World City puts together U.S. trade numbers that I really love. We're getting new ones soon. So Miami and Port Everglades are our two like top ports in Florida. So Miami, for example, number 12. In terms of all of the U.S., in terms of the top customs districts, which is exciting. And then you can see the top commodities and top trading partners. So for Miami, Brazil happens to be our number one trading partner, and Colombia,
right.
DR, and so on. So you have a lot of, you have partners that make sense. What happens a lot and what we see a lot of are in-transit merchandise. So merchandise that comes from China transits through Miami and goes to Latin America. So that's when you get back to anti-dumping and countervailing duties and Chinese tariffs and like ways to mitigate those anti-dumping duties and countervailing duties and Chinese tariffs and everyone freaking out about paying that extra 10% or 25%. We're doing a lot of that now. So now we go back to our top 10 tips and we're always starting at the beginning. What are your goods? Who regulates you, and how do you classify those goods? Or do you even know that you're paying the right amount of customs duties to begin with, and should you be paying them to begin with? Because if the goods aren't for U.S. consumption, you shouldn't be paying duties at all.
So you work with a custom broker also, or you?
Absolutely.
You
we work with a whole lot of customs brokers. So there are many all over the U.S. We work with a whole lot of amazing customs brokers. But what I encourage is every importer needs a toolkit. So within an importer's toolkit, before you start importing, they need a customs broker. That is hands down important. And then you need a customs attorney and so on. And you need a whole lot within your toolkit in order to have a successful import operation.
So I'm a little confused.
Gary, hold that thought.
I don't want to hold the thought.
I know. Hold that thought.
You got it, Gary.
This is the thought that you're holding.
That's true. We're going to be taking a quick break here. We're speaking with Jennifer Diaz, who is a board-certified international law attorney and expert in customs and international trade law as well. And this is a fascinating topic.
I think so.
Oh, no, it is. And it's so much to cover here.
Agreed.
As well. But when we come back, we're going to find out which agency, whether it's the FDA or other, that give you the most headaches with your clients.
So many to choose from.
You're listening to Legal News and Review on 96.9, 103.9. Those are FMs and 740 AM. And, of course, our iHeart TuneIn and iRadio Now listeners. And hello, Facebook. We're waving there as well. We'll be right back.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310 or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal Legal News and Review is back on the air. And we're speaking with Jennifer Diaz, who is a board-certified international attorney and expert in customs and international trade law, also a co-author of an interesting article of What is Trump's 25% tariff on Chinese imports? When we broke, I was asking you a question of what agencies seem to give you the most headaches. Is it the FDA or you never know who's listening,
State
so
Department?
Beat them up, but seriously.
Well, what I would say is when it comes to imports and exports, every company is always dealing with U.S. Customs and Border Protection. That's the one agency you don't have a choice but to comply with. And most
is there an
people,
acronym for that?
Yes, CBP. So CBP. U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is my number one agency that I deal with more than any other agency. So you're talking 60,000 employees from CBP, 329 ports of entry. That's a whole lot of people to deal with. So it's my job to try to get to know as many of them as possible. So that alone is a headache, and keeping up with their change in job titles is a whole other story. But now you have other government agencies. So let me give you an example. Let's pretend you're importing a toy for a child under the age of 12.
Like Gary.
And let's exactly. So Gary, you're getting a new toy. That toy has candy inside of it, okay?
Yeah.
So now you have a toy with candy, fabulous, coming into the U.S. How many federal government agencies do you think regulate you?
I don't know. Are there peanuts in there?
Yeah, so you got, FDA, which is smart. So you have Food and Drug Administration for the food portion. And people forget about U.S. Customs. U.S. Customs, period, because you're importing. And now you have another agency, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, because you're importing a toy for a kid under 12. Imagine, so you have three federal government agencies that regulate one product, and it could be your first importation. I have a client who imported a cute little toy. The handlebar broke off. What do you know? CPSC violation because it's a choking hazard for a kid. The colors that were involved in the cute little candies were not certified colors. What do you know? FDA violation. Then he had some cute little logos on top of the candy toy. Fine. What do you know? CBP violation for an IPR issue. I dealt with his first importation for 2 years, three different agencies, a seizure, a penalty after that, and then a notice and threats for additional penalties that
nightmare.
We had to waive off.
Yeah, it's business prevention.
So what happens? And what do I tell people? Don't you want to avoid all of that, right?
I would imagine.
Of course. Right? So one of my favorite articles is Band-Aid or Stitches. What's your compliance approach, right? So within your cute little packet, you'll see Band-Aid or Stitches. So
I'm
that's
stealing that.
One
that's
of my
a great
favorites
line. I like
because
that,
the idea is he had an explosion. It was stitches all over. That's open heart surgery, right?
Right.
As opposed to putting a little Band-Aid. If he would have come to me at the beginning saying, I have a cute little toy, I would have said, great, we need CPSC compliance, we need FDA compliance, we need CBP compliance. And we would have been able to talk about all of those things and had a plan to actually
ensure
them.
But he just thought he knew better, or it's so easy just to order it on Amazon or whatever the story is.
This is my number one pet peeve when it comes to imports. Do you know how easy it is to start importing? It's like this. It is a simple, simple process. You can be a foreign company, as you were talking about earlier, Gary. So you can have a foreign company that's importing, and then you can have a U.S. company importing. You need a tax number. Fine. And you need a surety to protect customs should you not pay your bill, right? At the end of the day, once you have that, you're good to go and you can start importing.
It's
nobody
too easy to make
tells
a mistake.
You all of the risks and liability. You don't take a test. To me, I can give you a 10-question simple test that'll scare you to tears and at least make you think twice about importing. Do you know what an HTSUS is?
I can't
do you know
even
you can have penalties? Do you know what valuation is and why you should actually get that right? Like, do you know what a free trade agreement is? Do you know what a surety is? Like, people can't answer simple questions. They don't even know what they're signing to start the process.
But time is money. If I have produce or I have fresh fish, let's say.
You know, and then what
I'm
government agencies regulate you, right? So we're talking about USDA sometimes, FDA, CBP. So now you may have three government agencies regulating that, and you may need a permit to begin with. And what if you don't have it? Then you don't get to blame your customs broker. It's you who had to do due diligence. It's your responsibility as the importer to use reasonable care at the beginning. And how many importers don't realize that? They don't read the guidebooks that customs has online. Who wants to go to the website and actually go through all those resources?
I looked at it and I got a headache.
Exactly. A lot of people do. It's it's scary at the beginning, and it's you have large companies that are assisting to create the new regulations and updating, and they're the ones that have a
seat at
the
table. But you don't just work with large companies.
No, we work with small guys and big guys. We work with everyone from Fortune 500 companies to individuals to mom and pops. So I've had some cute grandma and grandpa sewing kits for like dolls in their living room who made a cute little store. You know, you name it, we've dealt with it.
So let me jump in for a second. This is Gary. So there's a lot of forest and a lot of trees, but I'm at least confused, though Phil apparently gets it. what do you do? No, I mean, seriously. I mean, all kidding aside, it's a ton of information. You're obviously brilliant. Your resume is literally 8 pages long, and you told me that's not even updated.
Yeah.
So that's great. So apparently whatever you do a ton of it. But
she's also a professor.
Hold on. Do you help people fill out the right paperwork so they don't get in trouble? Do you represent
people
in administrative
courts? So look, let's put it in buckets. I put it in two buckets. It's only two simple buckets, compliance or enforcement.
Okay.
So I have the, oh no, I'm in trouble bucket. So that's, my goods were seized. They're seized by U.S. Customs. They're sitting at the port. I already paid my Chinese supplier. My customers are yelling at me. Help me now.
And what do you do, though, to help them? Do you go to court?
I get their goods back.
Do you go to court?
No. So my practice is 100% transactional. 100% you're negotiating, but you're negotiating on paper. That's the difference. So I don't step into a courtroom. I'm not in the Court of International Trade. I'm not in the federal courts. I fight on paper. So I'm fighting on the phone, fighting on the paper, fighting on email, and so on.
Facebook.
Everything is sometimes, right. Try to avoid social media.
So you're trying to fix the paperwork that they screwed up or didn't do.
Right. Exactly.
And then mitigate the penalties
to
get them out of the suit.
100%. Gotcha. So then there's a lot of mistakes that happen as well, so customs can catch you. So within our top 10 tips cheat sheet, the problem areas are 9 and 10. Customs can send you a request for information saying, I'm not happy with the information that was provided to me. Help me. That could be the start of an audit. So that's where we really want to make sure we are responding properly. Sometimes you're responding with a prior disclosure saying, you know what, I messed up and you caught me, customs. So now in order to avoid penalties, I'm going to tell you exactly what I did and air my dirty laundry to you. Sometimes you have a seizure case, a penalty case. Sometimes you have FDA or other government agencies that are putting you on bad guy lists where you can't even import without getting stopped and you have costly delays. So I'm consistently mitigating enforcement issues and trying to talk people into training and compliance, because that's also my passion on the side. I love that aspect.
I imagine if you had one violation, does it lead to others,
course,
and it goes on
what happens,
year after year?
So you think about it this way. You have a kid who messes up and does something wrong. You're not going to watch him a little more closely? Same thing with customs.
Story of my life.
Right, exactly. So you're going to be watched because you messed up. And it's the same thing with customs. It's, oh, this guy messed up, so let me check out his shipments a little more carefully. Why wouldn't you, right?
Real quick and briefly, because we're going to be running out of time. They made so many changes to the treaties. Seems like every day something changes. And
so
NAFTA,
something changing.
Is still in some products, is NAFTA certificate of origin still required?
Right. So here's the fun part. When it comes to these free trade agreements, for example, you got 20 different countries we're dealing with. So that's number 8 in our top 10 tips cheat sheet. What happens is you have a free trade agreement and you say, I'm going to buy something from Canada. Good enough, right? It complies with NAFTA. It's got to be, right?
Right.
You think it's that simple. But you don't realize the documentation trail should customs question you after the fact. So at a minimum, you need a certificate of origin, but you could need an affidavit of origin. You could need to provide the source documentation. So for example, you have
a
shirt.
Chambers of Commerce.
Right. So a chamber can help you with a certificate of origin and certify the certificate of origin, but that doesn't mean that they're going to know who your supplier was of yarn.
Ooh.
If you, for example, if customs needs to know where the yarn was made and whether or not you're eligible or not eligible for a free trade agreement usage as a result. So now you have a small company who thinks, I bought something from Canada, I'm good to go, I can use NAFTA. And then you have customs sending you a request for information saying, I need you to prove to me that you were truly eligible to utilize NAFTA. So not only your certificate of origin from the supplier saying that they gave you the goods, but who really made it? Was it made there or was it really made in China, then shipped to Canada and marked with the country of origin Canada? Because if so, too bad for you, not so much using NAFTA. So then you need to actually prove not only where you got it from, but where the good was actually made and where the actual component parts of the good were made. And sometimes you have a small de minimis foreign origin. That's fine. You have more than 10%. You may be kicked out of the free trade agreement.
I don't know if I've ever been happier to be a real estate lawyer.
Right?
I was just thinking the same thing. I'm happy you're a real estate lawyer also.
And I actually appreciate that because this is a small niche area and I would not like more of you in it.
I do tax.
So perfect. Stay there.
So why are people, this is a stupid question, I guess, because people draft their own deeds and screw things up, and that's a simple thing. Why are people, companies, doing this themselves?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of ignorance because it's so easy to do. And honestly, you can start importing like this with a snap of a finger, and you can get away with not getting in trouble for quite some time. So it's very easy to operate in ignorance.
This is a catch me
if you can. I gotcha. Right. So now, especially in this e-commerce age, it's just so easy to get started. And it's so easy to say, oh, this opportunity looks too good to be true. I'm going to get in it. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're into the compliance aspect, unfortunately.
We're running out of time, but how big, as a last question, because we're running out of time, How big of an importer do you have to be before you, like, if someone wants to have a booth at the flea market and they want to bring in 20 leather bracelets, are they subject to all this?
So here's the fun part. You're subject to commercial entry requirements and formal entry requirements if you're importing over $2,500 worth of goods.
$2,500.
So $2,500 is the magic number for a commercial entry in order to be subject to
per shipment or per year?
Per shipment.
Okay. So you get lots of little shipments, you're
saying. Right. So if you have lots of little e-commerce shipments, then you're not subject to formal entry requirements, modified requirements. But imagine you're paying duties at $2,500 or more, and you really need to know what you're doing at $2,500 or more.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're brilliant, and you know what the heck you're doing, and anyone who's importing or getting in trouble with it should be calling you. What number do they call?
305-456-3830. But also, we have so many resources online. Do lots of videos, lots of training, lots of past trainings, and lots of blogs. And we have all sorts of resources on DiazTradeLaw.com. It's DiazTradeLaw.com.
Yeah, if they Google Diaz, you're probably the only one that comes up, right?
Exactly. If they Google Jennifer Diaz and import, then we've got lots and lots of pages of info for them.
I have done that. And also Diaz Trade Law. You come right up. And it is an educational portal.
Absolutely.
Plus, when you speak to her, when you call her, you can ask her about duty, which is the fun part. On that note,
you got to pay me for that.
Only after you retain her.
Right.
On that note, I want to thank you very much. This has been incredibly interesting, and
it was
a headache now.
No, you don't.
I really, really am glad to be a real estate lawyer and leave this hard stuff to people like you.
There you go.
I want to thank you very much, Eric Yankowit. nice to see you.
I'm only allowed to screw it up.
And most importantly to our listeners, thank you. Be safe and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.